Kids A to Z with Dr. T. I am your host, Teresa Signorelli, and we are bringing you information about the five areas of child development, and that includes physical, intellectual, social, emotional, and moral, so parents can empower their children to thrive and really develop wonderfully. Well, and today's Brains in Toyland segment regards literacy development, so that really means reading and writing skills. And we're calling this segment Literacy Building Blocks from Birth, Yes, Birth, and Beyond. And we have a literacy specialist named Lauren Becker, and she's going to share some really wonderful information with all of us. So welcome, Lauren. Are you there?
Yes. Hi.
Okay. Hi. So can you, before we start in with our content, can you tell the audience a little bit about who you are and what you do? So as a literacy specialist, what is that? And maybe even talk about your training a bit.
Okay. Yes, I do consider myself a literacy specialist in that I work with developing readers and writers. And I also work with families to help them understand strategies to assist their children because they are their children's first teachers of literacy. I teach teachers effective practices to implement in the classroom, and I write and present about what I observe in articles and materials created to assist in the development of readers. I recently became a children's book author as the opportunity arose when I found an artist to match the words of a story I had written, thus creating a picture book, The Bagel Hero. My background is in early childhood education, my undergraduate work, and my graduate work is as a reading specialist, and then postgraduate work in research in curriculum and instruction and literacy.
Okay, great. So you have a really nice background to give us some important information and actionable information. I think that would be great for parents. So let's start talking about literacy and what it is. What can you tell us?
Okay, well, it's an interesting question. People always say, well, why literacy instead of reading as a reading specialist? It's because when we learn to read, we are using what we know about the language we speak to make sense of written symbols. And so in a reciprocal manner, we can also use written symbols to share our thoughts for others to read. So literacy is a fundamental component of a child's development. The acquisition of literacy skills is key to success in school and in future life endeavors, which is why it's so important for me and why I've decided to study it. Development of literacy is a continuous process that starts at birth and is influenced to a large extent in our environment.
Right, so that's a really good point. So literacy, it's a term we may use in university and when we're in our academic and professional environments, but it really is a nice term because it's more comprehensive because we mean reading and writing and spelling and all these other and talking and all these other general communication forms. So
and often,
Oftentimes
our families don't understand that. They think that we're just really learning to read, but in learning to read, the components that are used to learning to read are the spoken and oftentimes even the written language we use to learn how to read. A child's written language we often go to before they actually can read.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, actually. So I'm glad we went through that. And regarding what parents might not understand also, and sometimes other related professionals as well who are in child education, what are some common questions or maybe the most common question you find that parents ask about literacy and reading and writing development, et cetera?
Well, I find that parents are most often mystified by their child developing as a reader. And they believe that it is a technique, basically, that it can be only instructed by an educator. So they can't understand that, you know, that they are really capable of assisting with this process as well. They don't understand the connection of reading, writing, listening, and speaking, as I said, and that those are all really very important parts of the process. And in addition, they don't really understand strategies to work with these literacy components. So in fairness, they beyond not knowing the integration of those components of literacy instruction, they don't have the tools to know exactly what to do.
Okay. So before we talk about possible tools that parents might use, let's talk first about how literacy develops in early childhood. And maybe we can talk a little bit about major milestones or major behaviors at certain ages that children might develop.
Okay, well, it's interesting because until the 1950s, educators believed that children were incapable of beginning the path to literacy until they reached a certain age. And then in the 1960s, Marie Clay developed the emergent learning theory, which posed that children begin acquiring literacy skills long before they're able to read independently. This theory rests on the principle that the path to literacy begins as a child learns to speak. The emergent learning theory includes five stages of literacy development in children, beginning with infancy. So the very first one of those stages is considered, we call it the awareness and exploration stage. And this, we're talking about babies and toddlers. Literacy development begins as the infant first hears the spoken word and is exposed to the difference between spoken and printed words, which they would start to see in the introduction of children's books. As the infant becomes a toddler, it is important then to begin associating the proper words with the objects in the child's world. And also, children will begin to recognize letters and can associate certain letters with the sounds they make. So this is these gives us clues as to where, you know, the families fit into working with their babies and toddlers at this very first stage of literacy development. The second stage, we call that the experimental reading and writing stage. And that would be a preschooler. And, of course, those of us who work with preschoolers know that that is they're really into that experimental and kind of testing things out type of stage. And at this stage of literacy development, children are learning the alphabet song and the letters to important words like their own name, their parents' names, and they're testing these things out. Parents are advised to challenge children by pointing to commercial signs and asking the children to name the letters. Children are excited to look at books at this age, and they begin to scribble letters and write their own names. So they're just really experimenting with these new symbols that they've suddenly discovered. The third stage is
Oh, wait, Lauren, can I jump in for 1 second? I just want to go back a little bit to the awareness and exploration, and then which is stage one for babies and toddlers, and then talk a little bit also about the preschool age. Something I realized, can you give us an example of something parents can do with their babies and toddlers in that awareness and exploration stage that would foster these early literacy or maybe pre-literacy skills?
Sure. It's advised that parents read aloud to infants using brightly colored books, and nursery rhymes and poetry are encouraged to listen to the sounds and kinds of patterns and repetitive types of patterns in our language. As the child becomes a toddler, it is recommended at games like for the parent to use like what's that and what is this and pointing to an object and having children start to associate these words in our language with particular objects.
Okay, great. So that's the awareness and exploration stage with babies and
yes.
toddlers. How about at stage two? You mentioned experimental reading and writing for those preschoolers. Maybe give us some examples of activities parents can do there too.
Okay, well, just having children become, as I said, familiar with some environmental print, like some of the signs that we have in and about our communities. Also names, what our names are and what they look like. I always start to bring in lots of writing tools at that point, all kinds of things, you know, crayons, pencils, pens, paintbrushes, anything that can make the lines of language that we call print, and have the children, as what we said, experiment with those tools that will kind of bridge the spoken language to the written language.
Okay, super. That's helpful. So you
okay,
were starting to say there's a third stage.
And then the third stage, we call that the early learning, reading, and writing stage, and that's when our children begin their formal education into kindergarten and first grade. They begin to learn using phonics. And phonics, just to be clear about that, phonics is the process of recognizing letter sounds and combining two or more letter sounds to form a word. And I clarify this because oftentimes many people don't know. They hear these words and they don't know what they are. Children write phonetically at this stage, so instead of spelling the word correctly, children will often write what they hear when they say the word. And we actually want that. We want to hear what the children are hearing, and we want them to be able to understand that that connection in what they say is what they can also write and read. The word picture is written as, for example, picture, P-I-K-C-H-E-R, by children in this stage. And they begin to understand the sentences and the fact that individual words are separated by spaces. This is the age where I find the most fun to work with, because they're taking, you know, everything that's very raw, and it's actually the true transition of the language coming into the written form and actually making it the way we see it as real readers. So this can become very, very exciting for a parent as well to work with. And what I suggest to families at home is to start to differentiate what I call words that match pictures and words that do not. The words that match pictures, the mind automatically makes a mental picture of those words, a picture in the mind. And then the other words that we used to call high-frequency words, for example, is and the and of, the mind does not make a picture of those words because there are no pictures for them. So we begin to show children those are our connector words. Those connect the picture words. So if we can make some cards with both of those words, differentiating them, then the children can start to make sentence structures and play with them manipulatively to construct full phrases and full sentence structures and see how the language actually works. It's so much fun. And as the kids begin.
So let me jump in for a second. So by a picture word, you might have a picture of a ball and then the word ball written under it. And they can see the letters, but then they could also have that image of the actual ball in their mind's eye, so to speak. But those connector words like the and of and, there's no picture that they can see in their mind. And so if you had lots of picture cards with the words and then those function words, that the and the of, they can start to put those together, is what you're saying, to play?
Yes, exactly. And what's really fun, and I've done this sometimes with kindergarten and first graders, is to give them just one set of those words and let them try to make a sentence with that. And they find out they can't. They need the other words. So that's a great experiment for them to understand that we need both of those kinds of words. And then they start to categorize for themselves that there are these two different kinds of words, so that the phonics plays into some of this too, and that they can sound out some of the words that have the pictures. And the other words, we just know because we use them over and over in our language as kind of connector words. So it really works well to differentiate those.
Okay, great. So maybe give us one activity. You said this is the most fun age group for you. What's a favorite activity you have to do?
Well, that favorite activity is with the cards. The kids absolutely love that, and they play for hours moving those cards around and making different kinds of sentences. The other thing you can do is, after reading a story, is actually have the children pull out the words that match pictures. We call that a picture walk, and a picture walk is actually discussing with the children each page what's happening in a picture and then associating some of those pictures with words at the bottom of the page, wherever they might be on the page, that actually match those pictures. The children are mesmerized that those words really do connect to the pictures on the page. And in early reading, the types of books that you'd be working with children with, they would automatically have those words. So it's really a cool thing to see on the children's face when they see that these words that they think are something that only adults can read, they actually can read as well now.
Yeah, that starts to become a magical time for them, I would think. So again, these are activities that you can do with kindergartners and first graders in that stage three of early learning to read and write.
Right.
So how about stage four?
And then stage four is called the transitional reading and writing stage. This occurs in usually second and third grade. And at this time, this is a stage where children really are beginning to show some independence with their reading. They're beginning to understand the importance of what is written. And reading comprehension improves at this stage. And I mention improves because there's a misconception even with educators that I work with that the beginning stages of reading and writing, we're really only teaching the phonics and that the children are really just learning to decode. But I really stress that the comprehension is just as important, because reading is understanding what you read. It's not just calling out words. So we really want children to know that there's understanding, from the very moment that they associate these pictures and this written language with the whole of a story. So we really want them to understand that what's going on is telling something. It's not just word calling. So what I say in this transitional reading and writing stage is it is an extension of comprehension in that you're not just reading literal text that talks about what's happening on each page, but there's actually more into problems that occur in a story and solution. And so we're working more with the children and really discussing and chunking the text and talking about what's happened here and making predictions about what might happen next. And again, we want families that work with their children to, when they're, even if they're reading aloud, to stop in the reading and really begin to talk about what's happening and generate some thinking about what's going to happen next and throughout the text, even when it comes to the end of the story, and then talking about the all of it. This language and this talking through the story really builds the comprehension.
Right. And I think now we're talking about stage four, and that's talking about second and third graders grossly. And our show really focuses on that birth to five. But these are things I think parents can also do at those younger ages, maybe reflect a little on the story. It's a nice way for parents to model language for their children and elicit some language so they can practice too. Maybe not as sophisticated as you might with a second or third grader. Is that something you can see parents doing as well?
Absolutely. And just to get into those habits of what a reader does, with our common course, our state standards now, there's a focus on comprehension to the extent of really reading for understanding in a deep way and really having the understanding come from the text so that what you're saying that the text is about, you can really verify in the text itself. And so we're talking about something called close reading, where we're really, really using the text to defend what we've said about something. So that is absolutely a time when the child is even that very young to have the kids look back through the pages and talk about what they're seeing there and to have a grand conversation about it and to really get their thinking about what might be taking place directly related to those pictures and those beginning words and those very, early texts.
Right, right. Okay, Sue, go ahead.
So then the fifth stage is really going to be beyond probably your viewing audience here, your listening audience, and that would be stage five, which is really where we have competent reading and writing, and that would be fourth grade and beyond. We expect that children at that stage are really independent with their reading, and they have some what we call some lifelong skills that hopefully we have put into them where they not only can read, but they want to read. They choose reading as something that they do like we do, that they do kind of as a natural course of events. They pick up a newspaper in the home. They pick up a book that they're interested in reading. They read in the car going to and from places. They might sit in a doctor's office and pick up what there is to read there, so that they really are demonstrating what we consider to be a proficient reader.
Okay. So we really want all of our kids to become proficient readers and get to that really nice, competent reading and writing stage that you mentioned. So we make sure that they are on track along the way. What might a parent see in a child's behavior to suggest that their literacy skills aren't developing as they should?
They are or not?
If they're not, like, what would be a little red flag in a child's behavior, from infancy up? What might parents see that could be a red flag to them to say, my child may have literacy skills, reading skill problems down the road?
Right. Well, basically, they're not going to be demonstrating some of the behaviors that we've discussed in each of these stages. That's not to say that you're going to see everything in stage one that I described or everything in stage two. Sometimes that might be a little bit later. It might occur a little bit later developmentally, or maybe the child might be precocious and it might occur a little earlier. But having said that, if we are going through those first couple of stages of, you know, early literacy that we discussed, maybe stages 1 through 3, and we're not seeing some of these behaviors that I discussed occur, no interest in books, no turning up the pages, no matching words to pictures, not understanding how the words go together to make language, to be spoken, read, and written, you know, not copying words that they can see and being able to restructure those, then I think that there would be a call for some kind of further discovery as to what's going on.
Okay, and they could contact their school officials, their teacher, perhaps, about having that investigated further.
Right. I think if it happens in the very early stages, they might even want to consider talk to a speech and language pathologist who would talk, you know, about those first, that the language that's being processed at a very early age and the development of language, which actually is a precursor for these reading and written language skills, as you know. And then as they get into the formal education, then we might want to have the school folks that, you know, look and see what's going on in the classroom and what the teacher thinks about the child's development.
Right, and I'm actually a speech language pathologist.
Right.
And so yes, that would be especially
right.
If your child is not in school yet, a speech language pathologist would be a person to ask, and parents could go and access resources through their pediatrician to ask for referrals to have an evaluation if a child is not progressing as they should
right.
in their speech and language development and their overall communication and their ability to learn at a good rate on par with other children
right.
their age. So,
and then
right.
I always suggest, you know, of course, with any of this, to it's always a good idea to seek out the advice of the child's pediatrician, who would really understand developmentally if there seems to be a really significant delay.
Okay. Yeah, very good. The pediatrician is always a nice go-to person for those further referrals and those initial questions.
Yeah.
So what? Let's talk a little bit about what parents might be surprised to learn about literacy as their children develop.
Well, I find that not in the parents of children, but also educators that work with children, they're very surprised to learn the influence of the environment on the development. You know, there's been studies done regarding the lack of print, for example, the lack of environmental print in a child's development. There are areas of the world where there's very little environmental print, very deprived areas, where we might go into a town and not even see, you know, signs, or we might not even see store on the store or stop on a stop sign. And these particular environments are really, they really can cause delays in the development of understanding how language plays out in our world. So that is very important. And having said that, when you talk about environment, we're talking about the home environment. So, you know, we have situations where, especially today in our fast-paced world, where, you know, we don't even have time to have a conversation with our children. One parent said to me the only time she really has a chance to talk with her child is in the car, you know, going to and from someplace, because there's just, we're so busy in our lives now as far as all the different activities that we do, including education, that we just find ourselves, you know, we're not having that sit around the dinner table chats anymore. And this is really something where we find, I'm sure you see it in your practice as well, where we're finding kind of a decline in extensive language development, which influences all of it. It influences the articulation in language. It influences the ability to start to write, the ability to start to read this language, the ability to have time to read and kind of connect that with the spoken language. So that's huge. That conversation in our environment. Yes.
Yeah. No. It is all huge. And the earlier we start exposing children to good experiences, the better off they'll be down the road. And that's part of why we started the show, was to bring this information to parents in these early years so that they can really make nice informed choices of the types of activities that they do. Of course, life always happens, as I say, and it does get hard to schedule family time and time at the dinner table and time to read together. But that environment, as you say, really, really does influence how they grow. And in these early years, what they experience in these early years is really going to set the stage for how well they do as adults and then across their lifespan.
Absolutely. So I would say as literacy rich as you can make the environment, the better. You know, writing on the, you know, writing notes all on a board to each other, you know, rooms, so every room should have reading materials in it, all kinds of things like that. And I know with all of the technology and, you know, all the visuals that our children have at their disposal, that this is something that is a challenge. But having said that, it really is so important because unless you're exposed to that, you're really not, it's going to be foreign when the child comes into the school. It really is.
Yeah, and you know what, Lauren, I'm so glad you brought up technology because what I think a lot of people don't realize, and there's still a lot of research to be done, is that when we're reading print on paper versus print on an iPad or one of those other electronic devices, we're engaging different areas of our brain. So it's not the same. And what some of the literature is suggesting is that you don't comprehend and retain as well when you're reading in that electronic medium, when you're reading that screen, that you're better off in terms of remembering and learning, looking at that written, well, it's all written, but looking at that paper document. So that's something important to consider, too, because our life is so now, we're so bombarded with all this electronic visual information that how we learn and how our children are going to learn across their lifespan, we may have challenges that we haven't fully realized yet.
And yes, that brings in the other item that I find often surprises parents as their children develop, and that is changes along the way. You know, a child might appear to be developing one way as they following in the natural stages of development that I've talked about. And then there looks like there's a glitch in the road. You know, I had a conference with a parent just the other day whose everything has been going just right until the child became a fourth grader, and now the child seems to be declining in comprehension in the area of reading. And the family is very concerned, but it's a very, very natural kind of phenomenon to have an intermediate student kind of decline. And the reason for that is motivation. You know, there's other pieces. Obviously, and you know, your show discusses this with, it's the whole of the growth of a child that comes into this as well. We can't ignore all the other areas of emotional and physical and social that come into also the development of literacy. Those also affect, you know, you're talking about a human being. So we're not just talking about a robot that goes through these stages. So all these other, you know, all these other factors come into the development of literacy. So when a child's going through an intermediate stage and they become a fourth and fifth grader, you know, it might not be cool to read the way that they were beginning to read. And so it might, and it's also something that there's so many more other things to do out there, like we just talked about, that it's not the thing to do anymore. So it becomes a decline in what was such a cool thing, and all of a sudden we don't care about it anymore. So what I spoke to the parent about was exactly what I'm going to say here, that then the task is, or not really the task, but actually the idea is to motivate the child and to really try to find something that is of interest to the child at that point. Is it that they're really turned on to sports? You know, would they enjoy a sports series, or would they enjoy reading maybe, you know, a type of periodical that talks about sports? So you really want to turn into our kid at that point and say, who is this child that's developing here, and what might interest them in the area of literacy that I can turn them on to. Oftentimes it's a book series that the kids turn on to at that age. So what I'm saying here is that there's a lot of other factors that come in to development and literacy as well as anything else, and that these changes in the kind of smooth road that the parent is used to thinking it's going to happen, it doesn't always happen, you know.
Right, that's so true. I've seen pictures of what you think the journey will be, and one picture shows a straight line, an arrow from point A to point B, and then the second caption is what really happens, and it's this enormous squiggly line from point A to point B, and that's going to happen in lots of areas of our lives. So we should expect there'll be changes along the way. And like you said, and like the show talks about, there are five areas that we really want to look at, those the physical, the intellectual, social, emotional, and moral. What could be playing in here that might be precipitating some change? Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks so much. Now, let's look. Vocabulary is really so important. And reading, obviously, you need good vocabulary. So can we talk a little bit about that relationship?
Absolutely. And of course, there's a body of research that suggests a correlation between vocabulary and comprehension. So typically, as a reader becomes more proficient, they are gaining more vocabulary. So it's kind of a reciprocal relationship. Those who read have higher vocabulary, and, you know, you gain that vocabulary through reading. That's the vocabulary that you might have through spoken language in your environment is something that is kind of the baseline, and then the more you read, the more the vocabulary is built. So, and then, of course, comprehension, because when you read varied text, you're kind of learning the language of different genres and different disciplines, and so you are really gaining vocabulary in all these areas. So my recommendation would be is to read lots of different things. You know, don't get stuck in just reading to your children and having them read just one dose of something, whether it be just stories, but having them read a variety of different genre of literature, and then even nonfiction, a different text structures of nonfiction, so that they can really get a really wide variety of different types of written language as well as the vocabulary that's specific to it. And this will help when the student becomes a proficient reader and often and goes off to middle school and to higher level reading. We find that we talk about this change. We find that students that transition over from middle school to high school, even, they really are challenged with some of this textbook reading. And I'm sure you see it in the colleges when the students come in. You know, a student who was a wonderful reader all of a sudden cannot comprehend textbook reading, and it's because they have not been exposed to a variety of text structures. So even at a very young age, we want children to see that books can look different, that, you know, the writing in a text can be very, very different across texts.
Right, right. And it just shows, I guess, how important really that literacy is across everything you're doing. And what about exposure for younger children, different types? There's little babies and toddlers are pretty much going to have those picture books. But maybe different. Is there anything you can talk to that age range regarding variety there?
Well, actually, the picture books, quote unquote, the picture books are really good picture books. They are really used as high a level as adults. The picture book that I actually wrote was purposely written for that. A good picture book is really the marriage between the picture and the text, and it's not at a very young level. Actually, the pictures are to be discussed at length at a very high level, and I was just about to say that as far as language is concerned with vocabulary, we really don't want to dummy down the language. So when we're having these conversations with young children, we really want to use language that is good words. You know, I always say to the kids, I call them great sentences. There's a difference between a sentence and a great sentence. There's a difference between something that just tells about something and something that really gives great description about something. And so we really want to have our children, when they're looking at these picture books with us, have some really wonderful, deep language discussions about what's going on in the text. And picture books that are written well really avail themselves of the opportunity to do that, for families to really do that, to really talk about what the artist, why the artist drew the picture this way, even the technique of the artist. Why did they choose to you know, create the book like this? We have some texts that are only done in two colors. Why did the artist choose to do that? What was the meaning behind that? How did that relate to the message of the text? And what is the message of the text? Is there a lesson in it? So really, these picture books are wonderful. The other genre I would suggest are fables. I think fables are absolutely wonderful for vocabulary development and comprehension. The thinking behind what goes on and the character development in fables are at a very, very high level. And they're quick to read. They're enjoyable for children because oftentimes the characters are animals, which are part of a child's world. And they really teach some very valuable lessons, which I think, talking about those five intersecting pieces of child development, as far as moral development, they're excellent.
Yeah, those are really good points. And another good point you brought up that I wanted to address, and I don't think we have time to do it here, but that not all books are created equal in terms of how well they are written for children, for them to develop good language and communication skills, good reading skills. So that's a question maybe for another show, is to help parents look at a text, look at a children's book and decide, is this well written? Is this going to help achieve the goal of helping my child be a better reader, a better communicator, a better learner? And not just the text, but the pictures. How many colors, how few colors, how realistic or not, if they are drawings versus photographic kind of pictures. I imagine those are all things parents would want to consider when they're selecting items for their children to read.
Absolutely. It's a whole nother discussion. Yes, but you're right. It's right. And that's what the difference is between, you know, we as educators and parents, really, really, we're the ones to bring the wonderful text into our children's lives. And that's why, as an educator, when I work with in the buildings, I always stress that we teach with what I call authentic text. You know, most school systems work with published text for instructional use. I don't do that. I work with authentic text, so real reading is real reading. You know, we want readers to learn how to be readers because of the fact that they're doing the same kind of reading as what they did on the lap of their parents. So this is the kind of thing that we would like to have brought into an educational environment.
Can you give a more clear example? I'm not sure I understand what you mean by that authentic text.
Well, we're talking about actual text that we would read to our kids or we would read to ourselves, not instead of published text that has actual, it's kind of manipulated text so that a child learns to read patterns on every page. It's text that is phonetically based so that a child learns, you know, phonic-based, you know, types of patterns on different pages. It's not that way. It's an actual story, or an actual fable, or an actual poem. It's what we call regular literature. It's authentic literature. It's written by an author for reading. It's not written by a publisher for instructional use.
Okay. Okay, so there's a different type
example,
of... It's not highly controlled like a...
It's not vocabulary controlled. For example, Little Red Riding Hood, or, you know, the three Billy Goats Gruff. We want things that were really written for literature. They're real literature. They're not written for schools to use for instructional use. Now, our school is going to use those, yes. But again, we want to get away from some of that and teach teachers and parents how to work with text to teach their children how to read authentically. And this you know is very, very important because otherwise, the kid thinks that reading at home and learning and reading with mom and dad and grandmom, et cetera, is different than reading in school. And oftentimes, and I've had children come out and say this to me, I don't like to read in school. I like to read at home, but I just don't like to read in school because it's different. Mm-hmm. And we really don't want to make it that different.
Right. Right. I hear you. Okay. Thank you. That helped me. I hope it helped anyone else who might have had a question. But let's talk a little bit more about some of the tutorials that you've written for families and communities that you've worked with. I know you have one, I think, that's called We Can Read. Maybe you can give us a little overview of what that's about.
Okay, well, it really is related to what I was just talking about, and it was the reason why I wrote it. Because I went into schools and found this disconnect between reading and what we know. And again, remember, the goal is what we said in stage five, is to create lifelong readers that choose to read. So having said that, we are finding many communities that don't have that. And the reason is all the things we've discussed that are important are not occurring. You know, non-literate environments, text that is put into a school that is artificial and it just allows populations of people to become functionally literate and not really understand the joy of reading and really becoming a critical reader. And what the International Reading Association says in their children's literacy rights, and they've written rights of children to become literate, one of them is that children have a right to reading instruction that involves parents and communities in their academic lives. And so having said this, I wrote this tutorial as a consultant for a nonprofit organization in Baltimore City and called it We Can Read. And it is a research-based tutorial model designed to engage volunteers in the community to help their children improve their reading skills, so that they ultimately have this profound literacy in adulthood. And it's unique, the tutorial. It's unlike any other because it was designed with the premise that a child's community is the first and best teacher of reading. And in addition, the program uses what we know about good reading instruction as far as having a certified specialist involved in the building. The tutors receive one-on-one training from the reading specialist. The tutoring sessions are structured and they contain elements that the tutor learns and then the students learn about what reading is, you know, day after day after day. The tutoring is intense and consistent, so the students receive it on a regular basis. And the assessment is ongoing so that we really are understanding where students are going with it. But primarily, it uses authentic text. So what I did was I chose text in four modules, everywhere from emergent readers all the way from students who are what we were talking about in stage one of literacy development, who are just beginning to start to speak and are starting to match verbal words with print and verbal words with pictures, those types of books, all the way up to a student who is getting into the ending stages of literacy, which would be your second and third and fourth graders who are really becoming more independent with reading. And I have four modules, and the text moves gradually from module to module so that the child is constantly successful, and they're just missing a couple of things in each text as they move forward. And the tutor is trained to work with the child on a three-day sequence where they do the behaviors of a reader, and the child and tutor learns these behaviors, which are basically taking a picture walk, talking about the pictures and text on day one, and then actually doing a real reading of the text when they've already had familiarity with it on day two, and then on day three, actually discussing the text at length and doing a follow-up kind of activity that extends the comprehension of the text. And in addition to that, when we work with groups of students in this, we do what we call a buddy read, where we have two children together read the text, and one child assists the other with reading strategies that are taught. So there's a lot to it, but primarily it deals with teaching communities how to teach their children to read, because they are the first and the greatest teachers of reading. So it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. That is so true, what you say regard to communities. It is so important. I love the idea of what you've just described. What I don't know is how can people get in touch with you if they wanted to bring this to their communities or to their school systems? Do you have a website or an email address? And I could even, if you want to email that to me, I could always put it on the website for the show and for this episode.
My website is under construction now because of the new children's book that I just wrote, but it would be easiest right now to give you my email, which I will share with you so that you can put it on the website for parents to access. I would love to work with communities. I have the tutorial in many different communities. I have it even as far out as South Africa, which I had the privilege of going to as a literacy educator to work with communities there. So they do have it in some of the schools there.
Oh, fantastic. So do you want to read it aloud now in case somebody has a pen and can write it down?
Certainly. The email that would be most readily accessible for me would be always, A-L-W-A-Y-S-L-J, and the number 2 and the letter U, so always LJ2U, at yahoo.com.
Okay, so that's always L as in Laura, J as in John, 2 U as in unicorn, at yahoo.com. And like I said, I will put that on the website so parents and educators and other interested parties can contact you there, but we'll be looking forward to the relaunch of your website so we can hear also more about the book that you've just published called The Bagel Hero. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes, I would love to. It's a very good story. It's a great story about how it came about, I believe, just as good as the story itself. I wrote a story about my grandfather coming to the United States from Russia in the early 1920s. I wrote the story about 10 years ago and put it in a box thinking it's just a cute story and really didn't do much with it, as busy as we all get. And I, as fate would have it, I met up with an artist 2 summers ago who lives in Cape May, and she had an opportunity to stay over a weekend with her. And her artwork in her home just rung something inside of me that said this would be the perfect person to draw pictures of the story that I wrote about my granddad. And just her pictures of her family, et cetera, were just really exactly what I pictured in my mind when I wrote the story. And so I was brave enough after a couple of days to contact her and ask her if she would illustrate the story, and she said she had never done anything like that before, but she would read the story, and when she read the story, she said, I could smell the bagels in the street, so I will do it. And so it took her a summer, but she painted 20 paintings of the story, and this is not a traditional way to go about story publishing. I'm around a lot of storytellers and children's literature for all the years of my career, so I know that this is not the traditional way of going about things, but then again, I don't usually go about things in a traditional way, so it really is what picture books are, though. It's interesting that doesn't usually happen this way because it really is the marriage between text and illustration. So I got the name of an editor from another friend of mine who is an author, and you cannot go to a big publisher by yourself. You cannot be an independent unknown and go to a big publisher. It doesn't work that way. So you have to have your text go to an editor. And so I took my paintings from Linda Chambers, who is my illustrator, and my story, and took it to this editor. And she loved it. And she said that it was just a wonderful marriage of story and illustration. And so the rest is basically history. The story is about my granddad is a little 7-year-old selling bagels in this small town going across Romania and Kiev and moving towards the boat that actually took him to America. And in the little towns that they traveled through, he actually sold bagels in the street. And so it's based on that truth. But in the story, my granddad actually becomes a hero because he does more than sell the bagel. So I will leave the secret of the story to those that would like to read it. It is available now in paperback on Amazon, and the hard copies we expect to be in within another 10 days.
That's fantastic. And who's the population of reader, would you say? What age group?
Well, it can be told to a... you know, it can be told to a 6 or 7-year-old. It can be told to an early elementary school student, and then on up. I mean, I think I have many adults that have read it and have really actually enjoyed the story and have related to other family that have immigrated from other countries in their families. And the story itself is kind of a very charming little story about a boy who really understands how he can be a hero in his own right, even at that very young age within his community, which is, I think, is important for the children to understand that even in their little world, they can be somebody very special in a big world.
Yes, for sure. So we're wrapping up our talk here and coming to the end of our show, and we always like to end by asking our guests to tell us their five fabulous facts for families. And it's essentially the guests' favorite tips that they like to share. So would you tell us what your favorite things are to share with families so they can foster great literacy skills in their kids?
Certainly, and some of these I've mentioned, but this will be a nice way to summarize. The first is to provide access to lots of reading material, as I discussed, including books, newspapers, and magazines, just anything and everything that we can read and talk about should be available to our children in our homes. The second is to make frequent visits to the library. The library is still a wonderful resource for all kinds of the latest and greatest material out there to be read. And on that note, when we get to the library, we want to really make sure that we let our children choose their books because the idea of choice is very, very important. So that we can try to direct our children and understand our children as to what their likes are with regard to reading, which is just so important. And they feel empowered by making their own choices. And then the third tip would be to read aloud together every day in whatever language you feel most comfortable. To ask questions while you're reading aloud before, during, and after reading, and to call attention to new vocabulary. And to refer back to the text to answer questions and revisit events. Have your child think critically about what you have read, thinking about characters, plot, and personal connections. And one way to help your child handle more challenging books is to read aloud. So even when our children can't read a book, the most wonderful way to get them to want to read these books is to read aloud to them. And reading aloud can also help reluctant readers enjoy books and gain confidence. So even if the child can read one word or one line on the page, they're feeling so excited to read a book that that the family has read with them. And then the fourth tip would be to be a role model yourself. And we really haven't discussed this too much, but, you know, when we see somebody, when we talk about something, it's one thing, but when we do it, it's something else. And so for us to be readers and writers ourselves and for our children to see that is so important. And I tell teachers that even in the classroom. It's one thing to instruct it, but it's another thing for our children to see us, you know, just enjoying to read and write so well. And for us and for the children to see the struggles that we have sometimes with that and the different processes that we go through with that. For example, I have children that think they can never put down a book if they don't like it anymore. And I said, why not? If you don't like the book, put it away and get, there's billions of books to look at out there. And we all do it. We find a book we don't like and we put it away. So for them to really see the real behaviors of a real reader and a real writer in us. And then the final suggestion is to engage in grand conversations. I think that the conversation we're having today is invaluable. And the conversations that we have every day with colleagues, friends, our children, et cetera, is just underrated. I don't think we do enough talking anymore. I think the conversation has really lost its value, and it's just so incredibly valuable on so many levels. So to engage in grand conversations with our children at every chance that we get is just wonderful.
Yeah, that's so true, and I know we had mentioned before in some of our conversations offline that your STEM is engaging in something called American Education Week. I think it's this week, and it sounds like you'll be having some grand conversations where parents come in and get to witness the educational process. Is that the case?
I will be having grand conversations whenever I can with everybody and anybody. Yes.
Great. So I hope I hope that that this was a grand conversation for our listeners, and we might have generated some questions for you that you'd like to have answered. So we always welcome people to write into the show to send us questions that they have that they'd like answered, or perhaps they have suggestions for show topics that they'd like us to address. So anyone who's listening, please feel free to send those comments and questions to info@kidsatoz.com. That's info@kidsatoz.com. And you can always access the show anytime here on Blog Talk Radio or on our website, which is kidsatoz.com. And I guess that's it for now. Laura, thank you. Thank you so much. excuse me, Lauren. Thank you so much for being with us. And we'll have to get you back on to answer some of those other questions I had, like that the well-written picture books, et cetera. But that's it for now. So, everyone, thanks for listening. This is Kids A to Z with Dr. T.
Thanks so much.